Hello, my name's Fiona and I'm a London Blue Badge tourist guide. And one of the walks that I normally lead for London Walks is a tour on and about the London Underground. So I thought I would tell you a little bit about the Underground. London has the oldest underground railway in the world. And it's something that a lot of Londoners take for granted and complain about when it goes wrong. But I think it's also something that generally we should celebrate. And one of the things I like about the Underground and its history is that it's not just a story with one kind of thread. If you like, it's about engineering. It's about social history, it's about art and design, and it's about the logistics of running a network now. So there's all these different kind of threads to it. But I wanted today to just talk a little bit about tunnelling, because it's a story that takes us to right back to the beginning of the Underground and some of the most sort of up-to-date work that is still going on at the moment. So the first underground trains in London were the Metropolitan Line, and it started running steam trains under London streets in 1863. And the early lines, the Metropolitan and then closely followed by the District, are what we know as subsurface lines. So they are they're not very deep. They're quite close to the surface. They were called cut and cover. They dug down, laid the tracks, and then covered them back up. And that was the case for the first sort of 20 years or so. But in 1890, we get another line opening called the City and South London Line. And it is what eventually became the Northern Line. And it was a much deeper line. It was tunnelled rather than cut down from the surface. Originally cable operated, it very quickly became electric. So in fact, in 1890, London also got the world's first deep level electric railway. Or actually, but maybe not 1890, the electricity came slightly later. But the tunnelling technology, they were using technology which had been kind of devised and then evolved over the years, but originally started being used by the Brunels in the 1820s. Late 1820s, Mark Brunel starts digging a tunnel under the River Thames. And he had been inspired by watching shipworms tunnelling through wood, and the worms would eat their way through the wood, but they would then excrete the wood out behind them, and it effectively lined the wall of the tunnel that they'd made behind them. And he thought, well, this is something that we could use. So he invented a thing called the tunnelling shield, which was a big metal frame divided into, I think, 16 sections. Each section is big enough for one man to stand and dig at the piece of earth just in front of them. So think of it like a giant waffle on its side, and each square of the waffle has one person digging. And they would each dig 2 or 3 inches of the wall or the earth ahead of them, and then the whole shield would be jacked forward 2 or 3 inches, and they would line the tunnel with bricks. So they dug just one brick width and then moved the whole shield forwards and lined the tunnel. And that made it much safer and much more versatile than anything that people had done before. You could dig through much softer ground, for example. And that is basically the system we're still using nowadays. So the most recent, one of the two big projects on the Underground at the moment is Crossrail. And it is somewhat contentious because it has just gone massively over budget, over time. It was due to open maybe a year ago, and at the moment we're probably at least a year off it opening. But it has been one of the biggest engineering projects in Europe in recent years, and they've dug 26 miles of new tunnels underneath London. Not necessarily underneath everything that was there already. In some places they've kind of gone through the gaps. And at Tottenham Court Road station, they went through between sort of just above the platforms But below the escalators. So if you imagine the platforms are horizontal, the escalators are coming down at a diagonal angle, and they went through the gap between the two of them. And that meant they had a metre of space below them and 30 centimetres above them in a huge tunnel boring machine. It's all computerised these days. It is extraordinary precision engineering. But what they are doing is digging and lining, these days in concrete, the tunnel behind them using basically the same kind of techniques that the Brunels first developed. Now, tunnel boring machines have names, and traditionally they are female names because otherwise it's deemed unlucky. And there were eight main machines that were used for the Crossrail tunnels, and we had various different competitions for the public to name those machines. So six were in pairs, two were separate. The two separate ones, one was called Jess, named after Jessica Innes Hill, the heptathlete. This was all going on around about the time of the London Olympics, when she won the gold medal at the London Olympics and was a very prominent public figure around that time. And I think it's quite interesting, just as a little snapshot in a way, that the social history of that is that she's a, you know, a big sporting figure who's then come over into the world of, if you like, of sort of engineering. The other one that was on its own was a much smaller one doing a little side tunnel, and she was named by a primary school and they chose to call her Molly, which I rather like. But the other two went in pairs, so we have Victoria and Elizabeth, our two longest serving monarchs, both happen to be queens rather than kings, coincidentally, but you know, there we go, good to celebrate them. We had Ada and Phyllis. Ada is Ada Lovelace, who was the computer pioneer, arguably one of the world's first computer programmers. Phyllis Pearsall, the lady who compiled the A to Z, the sort of the map of London, who walked 23,000 streets across London to compile her map. And then the last two of the tunnel boring machines were called Sophia and Mary. And Sophia, let's start with her. Sophia was called Sophia Kingdom. She was a British lady who was working in France in the late 1700s as a, not a journalist, as a governess. And she met a man called Mark. They obviously quite liked each other, but nothing came of it then. Around them, the French Revolution broke out, and Mark fled to America, and Sophia was arrested as an English spy, suspected of being an English spy. She was very nearly executed. Luckily, she survived and eventually made her way back to England. And Mark, 6 years later, comes to England to look for her, and they get married. And so Sophia Kingdom changes her name to Sophia Brunel, because this was Mark Brunel, the engineer that we were talking about earlier on. And they have three children, two daughters and a son. Their son is known as Isambard Kingdom Brunel, perhaps one of the greatest engineers this country has ever known. And he eventually married a lady called Mary. So those two tunnel boring machines, Mary and Sophia, are the wives of Mark and Isambard Kingdom Brunel. But Sophia plays a particular part as well in this story, because there was a time in the late 1830s, Mark is in his 70s, he's just turned 70, and digging is going on the tunnel night and day, and he's finding it very taxing. He used to get reports every 2 hours, day and night, and he always wanted to read the reports, and she was determined he should rest more than he was. And so in June, his wife made a modest but ingenious contribution to increasing her husband's nightly sleep. She organised a pulley, a cord, a bucket and a bell outside the bedroom window. When the bell rang and woke him, Mark pulled up the bucket on the end of the rope. He inspected the latest samples of earth and the night assistant's report, put any instructions of his own into the bucket, sent it down again, and hoped to be asleep before it reached the ground. And that is a quote from a book called The Brunel's Tunnel, which was published by the Brunel Museum. If you want to know more about them, the Brunel Museum is on the south end of the Thames Tunnel that the Brunels dug, opened in 1843 and eventually became part of the Overground. So it now runs between Wapping and Rotherhithe on the Overground, the Ginger line. And the Rotherhithe side of the Thames, you will find the Brunel Museum. But I love the way that the very latest developments in Crossrail are honouring the names of people involved in the very earliest tunnels. The Thames Tunnel, the first tunnel under a navigable river anywhere in the world. And both ends of this story have spectacular engineering going on. But like I say, it's not all about the engineering. So I may well come back again another day with a little bit of art and design on the underground. Thank you.